the OTB Podcast Network.
David Myler is with us. David, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning.
We were just chatting before you came on there about a little bit of verbals on the pitch with your teammates. This is Harry Maguire calling Fred an effing idiot on the back of being called an effing knobhead by his own teammate Marcus Rashford last month. And what goes? How much can you get away with and go, oh, look, sorry, it was just in the heat of the moment?
It happens every day in training, happens every game. We'll have been, probably Fred's made a mistake, and then obviously, you know, United are pushing desperately to try and win the game, so Harry said something to him. Happens all the time. I think it happens in every walk of life, every form of sport. I think it happens all the time.
Do you get forgiven? Do you get forgiven straight away? Do you bear a grudge at any point with any of your teammates?
I think like some people will hold grudges. I definitely do think it's how, say for argument's sake, once Harry goes back into the change room after, if Harry was to have another go at Fred or continue to be shouting at him, then that's kind of like where grudges are almost formed. You know, that you're kind of, like Fred obviously being Brazilian, would kind of turn to other lads, be like, have you heard this fella? He's non-stop. Like, you know, and they kind of like, but I think, you know, people read a lot into it. It was a bit like, you know, Marcus Rashford and the Harry one, as you said, tell him, you know, whatever he said. People do read a lot into it. It does happen all the time. It's just the heat of emotion. Every player is there and they're desperate to win. But I certainly do feel like even we're here now talking about it, you know, that it's like, it does happen. Of course, in sport, it's common. Fellas are, you know, always shouting and roaring at one another. But that's just emotions. You know, they're there and they're desperate to win. That's their job for Manchester United. Sometimes tempers do boil over.
Just for the record, I don't think it's a big deal at all, but I'm really interested in like how much you can get away with. And certain players, I presume, have reputations that they're just a bit mouthy and it doesn't mean anything. But then I presume there are other players who, if they do call you something, you're like, what? Hang on a second. What?
I wouldn't say Harry's mouthy. From my time playing with him, he was never one to be shouting and roaring. Like, obviously, every now and then he'd have a moan. Everyone, that's normal, but I wouldn't strike Harry as the one. Of course, look, in the few years since I played with him, you know, he's done really well at Leicester, and then he's gone on, he's captain Manchester United. So he's obviously developed his character. Obviously, he's captain. But he was never one to be grabbing lads or screaming, roaring. You know, it's these fellas are here and they're desperate to win. Emotions do take over. Some of the worst ones are like, in the five-a-sides in training, that's like really hot. And like, obviously you're playing against your teammates. Do you know what I mean? So there's great rivalry in those games. Like we used to always play young v old on a Friday. And like the young lads used to take it proper serious, like because you wanted to beat the older experienced ones. And that got heated. Things were said, tackles flew in. Some of those games were like proper fascinating where, like I said, tempers do boil over. Which is good though. I think you can have certain players who don't like it, and like you said, they hold a grudge, and then they start looking at teammates differently. Others revel in it, and it inspires them and it drives them on to do better.
What's the worst thing a teammate's ever said to you on the pitch?
Do you know what? I don't know what the worst a teammate has said to me. I do remember years ago when I played against Manchester City with Sunderland. I'll never forget it, just because it's one of those standout things that I couldn't believe someone said it to me. But I've been involved in kind of a tackling with Gareth Barry, and we've had coming together. He said some verbal to me, I said some verbal back to him. And then I was thinking, like, in that split second, that kind of pause, you have someone who's played X amount of games in the Premier League.
A million.
He's won trophies. Yeah, he's done so much. And he just went, "You're ugly." And I remember turning to him kind of going, "Is that it? Is that the best you can give me?" I just laughed. I was expecting him even to bring up like, say, money, like his appearances. I don't think Gareth Barry's that type, but you know, I don't know him, but at that age, you're kind of thinking like, you could bring up your appearances, your money, your medals, everything. He just went, "You're ugly." And I was like, oh, that's thrown off my head. in regards to a teammate, suppose I've been called stupid a couple of times. I do remember a funny one when I was at Hull. We were obviously going for promotion the first year I was there in 12-13. And we had played Barnsley away, and if we'd won the game, we were promoted. We ended up losing 2-0. We took like 5,000 fans away to Oakwell and all that, and all this big hype, and we lost. And we were leading to the Cardiff game, which is the final game of the season, knowing if we won, we got promoted. So training was like at a high level of intensity. I remember I was demanding the ball off Abdoulaye Faye. If you remember him, he was centre half. He played with Stoke and Newcastle and whatever. And in the middle of the session, he just stopped and he put his foot in the ball and he picked the ball up into his hands. He just said, "You need to calm down. You are running around like a crazy lunatic." That was quite interesting. But I've had all sorts. I imagine I've dished out some as well.
And come here, when Abdoulaye Faye says that, are you like...
Listening, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Good point.
He's 6'2" Senegalese and he is strong as a horse. Yeah. I am not arguing with him.
Okay, that makes sense. And is there anything you can tell from how the team speaks to each other? In like, part of me thinks, and again, I'm not making a big deal out of this, but part of me thinks it's quite good that a team has the ability to, in the middle of matches, dig each other out, as long as there's no repercussions. And that if the team was silent, like if Marcus Rashford didn't feel like he could give out to Harry Maguire, something wrong in the balance of power, if Fred isn't expecting some kind of tongue lashing from somebody when he makes a mistake, there's something wrong. I don't know. I'm just wondering, like, what's it like at City? Are they all giving each other grief when, you know, there's a bit of a, when there's a moment in a game? Or like, in the Ireland team, if things are going well, are you giving each other, is it all positive, or is there some, come on, you need to do better than that? Like, what can you tell, if anything, from how the team speaks to each other?
I think you can often tell by the way, if I use an example, like if the way Harry speaks to Fred, that would suggest to me that Fred can take it. Certainly he gives it back to him. Same with Marcus, like Harry gives it to Marcus, you know, and vice versa. They can take it. Some fellas can't take it, and that's where you need to know. Like, can you imagine if Harry was screaming, shouting at Daniel James or, you know, Mason Greenwood? They might take it differently because they're, you know, the young lads, Dan James obviously had a tough time, that it could affect their confidence. You'll always find that it's always the same kind of fellas. Like you look at Bruno, like as great as he is, he moans at everyone about everything. If he doesn't get the ball, you see him, there's the hands in the air, they come down. A lot of lads will look, they'll know it's nothing personal. Every 9 out of 10 won't take it personal, but there will be one that takes it personal. And then it's kind of like after the game, you're in the change room, you kind of know to yourself, like, right, I've given them a bit of tongue lashing, or I've said something that maybe I shouldn't have said, that you just kind of nip in the bud right then and there. If you leave those things drag on, then that can be a problem. Because then, you know, lads are looking kind of going, well, he's this, that, and the other. I'm not trying my hardest for him, or it does happen. But like as we said there, it's great. You know, it's a bit of a throwback. It just shows that, you know, people care and they want to win. Like, definitely, I'm not saying you guys, but the press in England sometimes jump a bit all over it. Like, it's kind of like, it's a leading line. Like, Harry Maguire says this to Fred, oh my God, there's uproar at United. But it's not like that, you know? That's the thing. If you look in the change room at halftime, can you imagine yesterday, you know, the United-Liverpool game, United weren't particularly playing that well. The game was awful to watch. Mind, it was so, like, the amount of times the ball was turned over in possession. But can you imagine in the United change room yesterday that people are just going to sit down and not say anything to one another? You know, whether it being, you know, the ball was getting lost in midfield with McTominay or Fred or whatever. Like, there's going to be, like, the defender's going to be like, come on, lads, like, you can't keep losing the ball. And then there's going to be some fight back. Which you'd expect, but it's good. I enjoy it. I like hearing it. Obviously, you know, when I watched the cup final yesterday, you've got the fans, you don't hear as much anymore. I'm buzzing for the fans to be back, but I quite enjoyed listening. If you remember the famous one, I think it was BT released on telly, was Bournemouth v Manchester United. And I think it's Ramsdale's in goal. He's talking to Smith, is it Shaw, Greenwood, onto his right foot, and then he sticks in the top corner. But they had right verbals after, but they released the full footage. like, that stuff's good. Like, I want to see that. I want to hear that because it shows to me that they care. They want to do well and they want to win.
Mm. So when you're seeing Harry Maguire, for example, getting a little bit mouthy in his role as Manchester United captain over the last little while, is that just a quantum leap from the player that you played with? Has he come out of his shell completely over the last few years?
Well, he's had to own. He's had to grow up. He's now captain of Manchester United. He takes responsibility. Obviously, there was that stuff that he was the one who approached Ed Woodward. I don't know how it went down. Was it Harry went to see him on his own? Did all the players go? Did they call him in a meeting room or whatever? But he's now captain of one of the biggest clubs in the world. He has to take on the responsibility. He's had to become a man almost. He has to be the one to take the slack. Manchester United have always had great captains over the years. Certainly, you see the fans, how they responded to that, which is a good sign for Harry because he has. Yes, I think his performance has been a lot better this season, but he has come under a lot of stick. But he has certainly grown up and matured, and he's taken on that, added leadership and that, sense of responsibility.
Like, we've had plenty of conversations on the show across different sports about the importance of a captain and whether or not it's just symbolic. I guess, regardless of whether or not you have the armband, it is kind of what you make of it. It is kind of the leader that you are, whether it's verbally or whether it's leading by example. But in a sense, being a captain does matter, even if you're not the captain, even if there is a collection of different leaders across the pitch.
No, 100%. Certainly when you rely on your captain, certainly when times are going tough, when you need someone to kind of take on that added responsibility of, give me the ball, I'm the man, I can shelter this, and then that confidence can filter into the team. It's easy to be captain of a team when you're successful and you're going well. You look at Fernandinho yesterday, he gets taken off, he hands the armband to De Bruyne, who then takes it off and hands it to Sterling. It's kind of they're passing around because they're all playing at such a high level and their performances have shown that they're going to win games. It's when your captain, you really rely on your captain when your team isn't doing well and you're struggling, that he has to be the man to front up. Obviously, when I first came into the Ireland squad, Robbie Keane was captain. He was incredible at that. He knew how to give lads that little... Every person that was in the squad, probably bar John O'Shea, who'd been around a long time, like, Robbie was huge for us. Robbie could just turn and go, well done, you're doing well, keep going. That was massive. So the role of the captain is vital in a team. Certainly when it's easy when times are going well, it's when times are going tough that, you need someone to be able to say what's required, whether that be positive or negative, to give someone that pick up the backside or to give that person that encouragement. I think Seamus is very good at it as well, in the sense that he knows who to push, not to push, who needs that arm and who needs, like I said, the kick up the backside.
I think Maguire comes out really well from the last week and the Woodward stuff. Like, that's, the image of footballers over the last decade or so has largely, in a way, been ruined by agents who make them sound like prissy prima donnas who are detached from the world. And all we think about them is in terms of the number of zeros at the end of their paycheck. But actually what happened was the footballers stood up for football against the owners of the clubs that they work for. And it was... As the stories start to be written and as we start to understand exactly how the whole thing fell apart, I personally feel that that's more important in some ways than the politicians railing against it, because ultimately the politicians weren't going to be able to do anything and they only got on board after they realised the fans were against it. But the players were risking quite a lot. They were risking their relationship with the club. The next time that you're sitting down to do a contract, it's with the person you're going in to say, this doesn't make any sense. So I think when the story is finalised, when we all kind of agree what the full thing, how it all happened and unfolded, those players, Jordan Henderson for calling that meeting, ultimately they didn't need to do it, but him and Maguire and whoever else at Manchester United was helping with that, it's a really huge thing for them, and in retrospect it's going to be.
Oh, definitely. I think you hit the nail on the head there, because it's very difficult, as much as managers of these clubs and the players were thrown under the bus. Certainly the managers were, the players are just being told that they kind of said, well, enough's enough. We're not on board with this. Of course, we've seen the outrage from the fans across Europe, mainly the UK, of course, because that's what we see. But the players certainly did step up. Obviously, that whole thing with Harry going to see Ed Woodward, kind of sorting this out to say, look, we're not happy with this. And it wasn't a case of it was one or two or three or four players. When a group of players are saying this is wrong, that puts a wave through the club, because then you're at ends then, because if the players aren't happy with what they're being told to do, like, albeit, yes, Harry is the face of that and he's the one that's gone and had that conversation. If he's got the backing of the rest of the team, then that's a huge problem, because you're inevitably trying to get players to do something they don't want to do, and that can only go for so long. And if it's one or two players, they could look to say, right in the summer, we can move them on and get rid of them or creating the noise. But when it's a group, a squad, can you imagine if, as much as there was the uproar from the fans, but then if the club had turned on the players in certain circumstances, that would have added even more outrage. So with moments like that, it is, you know, they do deserve credit. And like you said, Harry has come out really well from it, because he has come under a lot of stick, which a lot of it hasn't been his fault. Not his fault. United paid 80 million for him. You know, obviously Ali backs him, made him captain, which is massive to be, look, Harry knows that there's going to be the added responsibility of being captain of Manchester United. You look at some of the great captains they've had, it's going to be tough on him. It's going to be hard, but it was the same as, say, the other example used is Jordan Henderson, like, you take over from Steven Gerrard. It's not an easy person to follow. Certainly, if the pair of them have really, probably Jordan is more ahead of Harry in terms of what he's done before, like, certainly lifting the Champions League and the Premier League. Can you imagine if Harry is to go in there to win the Europa League, how big that would be for him in terms of his legacy as captain of Manchester United?
Does the weekend's football make you want football even more? More football even more? The layer upon layer of games that we've got all season. It's not exactly been a great advertisement for adding more games onto the season, has it, what we saw at the weekend?
No. There's only so much football I can watch now on the weekend. It's just too much on. But then again, look at the circumstances we're in with the, you know, I know we're at the back end of the pandemic over here. Certainly, it's just every game is on television and only kind of picking out certain games. I think now once fans start to get back into stadiums, you seen yesterday with the League Cup final, just 8,000 in Wembley, to think that holds whatever it is, 94,000, 95,000, but they made a noise. And you know, you can see all the players, the managers after speaking how great it was to have them back. Once fans start getting back into stadiums, obviously I think the old TV companies will plug back the games. They won't have as many on. I think they've just kind of more or less done it for the pandemic. And I'm certainly looking forward to being able to go to more games. But I don't think we can sit down and watch 4 or 5 games on a Sunday anymore.
If you're Daniel Levy, do you regret how the last week went? Because all of a sudden, you're open to questions about whether or not Jose Mourinho should have been sacked last week.
Such a tough one, isn't it? You know, you're kind of, as people have said, like, if you're a Spurs fan and going into this cup final, you're looking for a manager to go and produce a performance against Pep Guardiola in a cup competition to, you know, put on this managerial masterclass of finding a way to defeat them. Kind of fella you'd look for, so is Jose Mourinho. I definitely do think there's more going on behind the scenes. There's been a lot of rumours about that positioning the table meant his payoff was so much. That if he'd been in the top 6 or the top 4, it was higher. If he'd won a cup, kind of, I think it was all box ticked, kind of leading into the cup final, that if he'd won a trophy, he was entitled to so much money. So you don't know, and we all know, one thing we do know is Daniel Levy is a businessman. It is a strange one, albeit I've said the other day, Ray Mason's obviously a friend of mine and former teammate, so I was happy for him to be given this opportunity. You know, as much as Ryan spoke during the week about wanting to play the Tottenham way, and see, he's Tottenham through and through, just felt like a Jose Mourinho performance, everything about it. You know, it was poor. Spurs never really looked like causing, you know, Man City much problems. If Man City had their shooting boots on in front of goal, it could have been a landslide. It was complete and utter domination from City.
Who do you then blame for that Jose Mourinho type performance? Is it the legacy of Jose Mourinho? Can that have such a footprint on a team that even with a new manager it takes a while to get out of that? Or are the players actually the ones to blame for what's happened, for not kicking on after Pochettino left?
It's very difficult to, you know, point fingers. There was many times it was highlighted that, you know, Pochettino shouldn't give money to invest or reinvest, you know, in the squad to add new players to kind of take them on to the next level. Obviously, they went a different direction with Mourinho. He's added some players. I think Ryan would probably see them through this season and look at appointing someone for pre-season. You know, you talk about the stamp that Mourinho's put in the squad. And that was evident from yesterday's performance. Certainly, if a manager came in, he gets pre-season, gets time to, you know, bring across his philosophy and his methods. You know, he has plenty of time to work with them going into the new season. It's just a case of who do Tottenham, you know, hire. Obviously, the one that's been linked a lot is Nagelsmann, but they're tipping him now to take over Bayern Munich. So it's a case of where do they go for now? Where do they go here?
I mean, at least they were looking and in the right direction. If Nagelsmann ends up with Bayern, they're like, okay, well, you know, our selection process is good here. Let's not just get the next celebrity who's available to us, who's out of work for whatever reason. There's news this morning. The Premier League have announced that Thierry Henry and Alan Shearer have become the first two players inducted into the Premier League Hall of Fame. You know, this is going to bring back that whole debate about football only starting in 1992. Did you ever play against Henry? Was that did you miss him or did you get up against him?
No, I never played against him. I was at Sunderland when he came back. Do you remember if that loan move he had back from, I think it was the MLS. What a player though. I think it was always inevitable that they were going to bring a Premier League Hall of Fame. I think it was probably just picking boxes and make sure they could do it. Phenomenal. I know a lot of Irish people haven't forgiven him for the handball, but I often ask myself, would I have done the same to get Ireland to a World Cup? And I would have, so don't really have too many complaints about that. But certainly what a special player he was.
Is he slightly underrated? Like, have we forgotten just how sensational he was? That, like, he was the best player on the team that put it up to Alex Ferguson's Manchester United for, you know, 5, 6, 7 seasons?
Well, I haven't forgotten about him. I don't think a lot of people have. I think the younger generation, like you said, there haven't seen enough of him. You know, you see clips, whether it be Premier League greats or classic games or whatever, you see little bits and pieces of him. But anyone who's watched any bit of the Premier League, you know, Henri, certainly one of the best players to ever play in it, arguably the best. So I don't think he's underrated, no. He was exceptional. The stuff he used to do with the ball, and he always played with a smile on his face. Like, he's 6'3". He's so fast. He can go either way. You know, his finishing, you know, that finish, that outside the right foot, just past it, you know, past the goalie, is renowned as the Henri finish. He was a joke.
So they've obviously done Henri and Shearer first, but next has to be Roy Keane. And if they're doing them two at a time, it has to be Keane and Gerrard, but it has to be Keane next. Whatever happens next, Roy Keane has to be next in the Premier League Hall of Fame, right?
Look, my opinion, I'd have, of course, Roy should be in there, but whether or not they'll put Roy in that soon is another thing. I think they'll probably tick the boxes of England internationals, your kind of your Wayne Rooney's, your Frank Lampard's, your Steven Gerrard's. I think they'll end up getting in ahead of other people because obviously they're iconic English players. As we know, English players will be favoured over Irish players. Certainly, when you talk about Hall of Fame players in the Premier League, Roy Keane is definitely up there. You know, 7 league titles, 4 as a captain, that stuff is unheard of. It's phenomenal. But then you look at the great Manchester United teams, there's an argument then for Gary Neville, Paul Scholes, those boys, you know, Ryan Giggs, of course. There's loads of fellas. There's no doubting Roy Keane will be inducted into the Hall of Fame at some stage. Just a case of when.
Yeah, don't add insult to injury, Premier League. Stick him in straight away. David, good stuff this morning. We didn't even get to talk about Liverpool and their difficulties, but luckily there's a month left of the season and they haven't made it to the Champions League. It looks like they aren't, so we have plenty of time to delve into that over the next few weeks. Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
David Moyer giving us his thoughts there. The Hall of Fame is a nice little distraction for everybody to talk about when the quality of the football wasn't great at the weekend.
It's a good idea because at this point every year, people tend to maybe lose a little bit of interest in the Premier League. It doesn't help when you got a terrible weekend to look back on, but I do think very regularly you get a bit of a procession to the title, and having this sort of conversation in and around March or April every year wouldn't be a bad move from the Premier League standpoint. So they're kind of moving with the times a little bit. I think anything that you see in American sports, there's always going to be some variation of it over here.
Ah, but what was it Big Sam said? We're Britain, not America.
Well, if Big Sam gets inducted into the Premier League Hall of Fame, he will happily wave his Union Jack.
That's a good question, right? So if they're going to put managers in, does Big Sam make it? Never been relegated. This season he's going to get relegated. That last-minute equaliser for Villa last night.
Well, actually, you talk about Roy Keane being the next man in. The next man in should be Alex Ferguson. If they're going
to...
Maybe not, but...
Well, if they're doing managers, you put... And if they're doing them two at a time...
Ferguson and Wenger.
You do. And you've got to put Jose in.
Jose 100% in there, but his story ain't fully told yet, maybe.
No, that's true. So they've got to be retired, and there should be a time limit on when they retired. I mean, look, I think that it's clear they'll put Beckham in before Keane. Here we are talking about it, getting sucked in. Look at how easily we're distracted.
I'm here for it. I'm absolutely going to get sucked in by this and talk about it.
14 minutes past 8 this morning. The comments coming in thick and fast. Bonnie asks, what's a fair punishment for the Greedy Six? The Greedy Six are being praised for the speed at which they got back on board by UEFA at this point. So I don't think there's going to be any punishment for those clubs. I think that the piss and vinegar of the annoyance is dying out slowly because the football came back. Champions League this week. Imagine if there's two English teams in the Champions League final. It's possible. It is possible that there might be two English teams in the Champions League final. What's going to happen at that point? Will everybody be saying, all these clubs need to not be allowed to play in this competition next year, so we'll punish the fans and players? I can't see there being any punishment. They've taken their various executives off some high-powered committees in the Premier League. They'll be back on next year, because by ostracising them and isolating them further, you're just going to make them talk to each other more and go, well, it didn't work out this time. What are we going to do next time? So I don't know.
Yeah, like, I mean, the move here is to absolutely take what you've got and run, because they're backtracking, and they have been backtracking for the last week, those Premier League executives. If you give them a further punishment, all of a sudden they feel that they need to get their revenge as well. They'll start to get pissed off. It's not fair, but that's how they'll start to think, and the likelihood of this rearing its head again will be higher.
A transfer ban would be pretty amazing if they could do that. Wayne Ryan says, Bielsa for Spurs, please. Imagine yesterday if he had that team. I mean, Bielsa for Spurs would be an incredible experiment, but one that I can't see Daniel Levy getting into at this point. It's 15 minutes past 8. We'd love to hear from you. 0879 180 180 OTBAM live in association with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, giving you the confidence to tackle the day ahead. We're going to be talking plenty of rugby on the show and loads more Irish rugby star Stacey Flood's going to join us next. We've got Alan Quinlan a little bit later on. We've got the Gillette power rankings and loads more to come. Stay tuned.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.